Welcome to Podventures in Odyssey. I'm Emily.
And I'm Tatiana.
Every week we sit down to recap and discuss an episode of Adventures in Odyssey. We are going in album order, and today we are in album 8 on episode 7. Pretty sure it's one of the lost episodes.
Mm-hmm. This is called An Act of Mercy, and in our little blurb we sometimes say we are re-listening to it, but we've never heard this before. Neither of us.
Nope.
Never in our lives.
We are mostly re-listening, and in some cases...
Being surprised by whoever put the club app together.
Someone decided these were worth putting back in, and I don't know who made that decision.
Yeah. There is a lot of fun trivia in it, though. We get these very delightful special emails from our listeners, and one listener in particular knows a lot of Odyssey facts, like, a lot, and shares them with us, and it is always a delight to hear. And one of the Odyssey facts that he shared with us for album 8 is that there was a character named Officer Harley. Odyssey listeners might be familiar with this character. A lot of Officer Harley episodes were later re-recorded and, like, spliced together with the old recordings and formed into new content. So, like, the one-off kid characters were replaced with consistent kid characters, and Officer Harley, who was, like, a really goofy police officer, was replaced with a slightly more serious police officer.
Only slightly.
Yeah, he's not, like, dumb, I would say. I think Officer Harley is kind of doofy.
Yeah.
And he later gets replaced with a private eye, and parents just didn't want their kids to think that police officers were dumb, which is, like, fair enough.
Yeah. And the goofy PI thing is, like, that's a known thing in fiction. That's a common trope.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, it makes Odyssey a little bit more consistent because it's like, okay, we don't want to live completely in Looney Tunes land. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you don't want to be wondering, like, how did this guy become a police officer? But anybody can say that they're a private detective, and then they are. And that's advice to you, listener, if you have ever had a dream. You don't even have to solve any mysteries. You just have to say.
You can just sit by the window, peering through the Venetian blinds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really all you need is Venetian blinds and an office with frosted glass and your name on it.
And, you know, an inner monologue to go along with it.
Maybe a secretary, if you can afford it. Or if you can, like, bribe your younger sibling.
And some of those candy cigarettes. Because you shouldn't smoke real ones.
No, don't do that. Or maybe toothpicks or something.
Yeah, toothpick, that's
little
better.
Bubble pipe.
Chewing gum.
Chewing gum. This is our advice podcast on how to start your very important private detective business. So yeah, thank you to our listener for sharing the Odyssey facts with us. Keep them coming. We really appreciate it. Enjoy hearing from anybody who has Odyssey facts or thoughts or anything to share. So that being said, this episode has a very different flavor from pretty much the rest of what we have been listening to lately.
I would say the thing about it is it would be consistent with early Odyssey episodes, but it doesn't, like, the arc of Odyssey has been tending towards tighter stories, more consistent characterization, and more consistent world. And this feels out of place with that.
It feels out of continuity because Connie is in this, and it's pretty clearly Connie before she was a Christian. Like, not explicitly, but to me, it, just...
I feel like, it feels like Connie recently moved to Odyssey is the thing.
Yes.
It feels like she's still holding on to her California socialite status.
Exactly. Yeah. So there are a lot of clues both in, like, the acting, the storytelling, et cetera, that make you feel like, did we just go back in time? And the answer is yes. At least part of the recording is from back in time, and then part of it is new and revamped.
And I would also say, if you listen closely, you can kind of tell that the sound was recorded at different times, because the conditions are not going to be, like, perfectly the same.
True.
And the equipment might be different. I had an experience recently of I'm playing a video game that is basically a revamp of an existing video game that I have played before, and every time there is new dialogue, the voice acting sounds ever so slightly off because the voice actors are a little bit older and the equipment is a little bit newer.
That's so interesting. That's like if you watch The Incredibles 1 and 2 back to back, you can hear how the cast has aged in their voice.
Mm-hmm.
Even though those movies are not supposed to take place too far apart in time.
Yeah.
But I think they came out like over a decade apart from each other.
Pretty much.
Slightly similar stuff going on in this episode.
But if you're not listening for it, I don't think it's necessarily obvious.
Mm-hmm. But if you do want to, our listener did say it can be fun to listen to them side by side. Take the original Officer Harley and then listen to the remake side by side, because I think this is only the first of the remakes. And we will have other Officer Harley redos, and we will just have to figure out which ones those are.
Are they all lost episodes? Did they remove all of these remakes from the original Odyssey album canon?
We're gonna find out, because, like, I've never heard this before, and I grew up with Album 8, so... We shall see.
We haven't even gotten to the episode yet.
Right, I know. We're famously known for diving directly in so fast.
I like Chris's intro. You've probably heard apples are good for you. And they are! Unless you steal them.
Her intros sometimes are so straightforward, and other times they, like, really make you think.
This is reminding me of the intro to the Thanksgiving episode.
Uh-huh.
Where it's the sun has risen.
But it was two suns. It was a different sun. Not the sun in the sky. It was the sun in the room who was the son of a father. It was Jimmy. Jimmy, the son of George. It was like, what is happening?
Yes. Same vibe.
Yeah, same vibe where you're like, I don't know where she's going with this. Like, I don't know what's going to happen next. And she explains this by saying that, you know, if you steal them, then you're in for trouble. And it really, you know, makes you think, like, what does it mean for something to be good for you? Like, she doesn't say it's healthy for your body. But in a way, it's kind of like saying, are apples good for you? No, if they get thrown at your head. like, okay, when you say a food is good for you, you generally mean, like...
good to eat.
Yes, if you put it in your body, what will happen to you?
Mm-hmm. Not like, it's good to steal.
Yeah. Is it good to steal? Well, these apples are not good to steal. And we'll find out why.
These are not just public apple trees that you can pluck the apples from.
Mm-hmm. In fact, these apples are not even ripe, so she could have even gone in that direction, too. It's revealed in this very scene. So, Rodney, whom we've just met, I think, one other time before, he's in the back of a police car, and the sirens are whirring. Is that the siren?
I don't know.
A verb, whirring? The sirens are blaring.
Blaring.
Well, these sirens are whirring. And they're whirring up the drive to Tom Riley's house. Got me for some reason. And Tom comes out like, what on earth is all of this ruckus about? And the officer is like the most Irish person that there could be.
Is this Will Ryan?
Yeah, it's Will Ryan, who is Eugene.
I was, like, not sure at first, and then I heard, like, that telltale crackle in his voice, and I was like, oh.
Yes, he has a lovely little Eugene crackle in his high register. Yeah, he's Officer O'Ryan, which is helpful to remember. But, yeah, he has brought Rodney in because he caught Rodney stealing Tom's apples like a squirrel in the wintertime.
And Tom is distressed about the siren.
Mm-hmm.
And then Officer O'Ryan is like, oh, yeah, Rodney just wanted to hear it. And he's like, yeah, I booked that kid, but also I did play the siren for him, like a kid on a train being like, can I hear the train whistle?
Totally. Yeah, totally. I wonder if originally that was meant to be more of a comedy beat with Officer Harley. Like, I wonder how much they changed his lines.
I know. That was my question throughout, because there are many moments where I'm like, this does not feel like it should have been played straight.
Yeah. Yeah. But yet it is. Mm-hmm. It's more or less played straight. Yeah, the comedy is clearly there. Like, I was like, that's quaint and silly of you, but whatever. Rodney also is a lot less menacing in this one than his, like, maybe menacing is the wrong word, but
I think,
like,
that's a good word for it, actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, he does menace somebody eventually in the episode, but, like, he's a lot less sure of himself, I would say.
Like, less cocky.
Exactly. I feel like the Rodney that we heard in the Isaac episode, and the Rodney that we're gonna get pretty much from here on out, like, once he becomes consistent, is, like, extremely unrepentant and very sure of himself. And this Rodney is a little bit more plaintive. I mean, Rodney will squeal when you catch him, but there's something a little bit softer about him in this episode, I feel.
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's, like, the directing of the voice acting, or if it's just the lines that he had to read themselves that don't lend them to the Rodney characterization.
Maybe the actor hasn't found the character quite yet. Like, I wonder if this is his first time portraying the character, even though we've actually met Rodney before. Everything's all out of order.
Right, right. That would make sense. Although, I do think "I'm a victim of circumstance, honest" does feel like a Rodney line.
Yes, exactly. I think a future Rodney would have put a lot more, like, pathos onto these lines.
Yeah, like, "I'm a victim of circumstance!
Yeah, it wasn't my fault, honest!" And he claims that it was accidental that he broke Tom's fence, and also that the theft was accidental. And Tom's like, that's very intriguing.
I've heard of someone accidentally breaking something. Don't think I've ever heard of someone accidentally stealing something.
Okay, so Rodney is afraid of being put on restriction. He is afraid of the word principles, because it always means that adults are about to do something to him.
This is also a line that I feel like would have gotten a good line read from a more established Rodney.
Right. Which is just like, Rodney is a little bit slow on the uptake.
Yeah.
And also concerning that this child is, like, every time morals, principles, and values get mentioned, something bad happens. It's like, maybe because you have done something.
Did you ever consider that?
So the big problem is that he is going to owe Tom $30 for all of these damages, which Tom explains after, like, okay, these apples, like, for one thing, you should not be stealing them because they are green and not ripe. So they're not good to anybody, and you have to, like, respect people. Tom basically, like, explains to Rodney why stealing is wrong.
Also, two things here. One, the line read again of, like, now take these apples, for instance, and Officer Orion's response felt, again, like slapstick.
Yeah, Tom is, like, doing it for example, and Officer Orion is like, he already did take them. And it's like, it is funny, but the way that it's played is, like, not fully leaning into the comedy. Because, once again, we're trying to have this police character not be a comedy character, but
yeah,
it's only, like, halfway working. It doesn't help that they gave him this, like, extreme Irish accent.
No, it doesn't help. Second thing, though, the way that Tom explains what stealing is to Rodney makes him sound like he is a much younger kid than I think we have been led to believe he is at this point. Because, yes, he is in middle school, but we also know he has been held back several years.
Maybe that's it. Rodney sounds like he's, like, 12 in this, as opposed to, like, 15.
Or 10, maybe?
Yeah,
to
even.
To have stealing explained to you?
Right. If Rodney was being played, like, his normal self, I think it would have been a lot funnier for Tom to be like, Rodney, do you not understand the concept of why it's wrong to steal?
Has no one explained this to you in your life?
I mean, the answer might be no.
Fair.
So Officer Orion is like, shall we arrest him? Or make him pay restitutions?
Restitutions.
This would not have been a good episode for young Tatiana, because this would have been my first encounter with the word restitutions, and I would have been like, Mom, Dad, what are restitutions? I don't think restitutions get explained quite yet.
It does pretty, like, immediately. Tom gives, like, the short answer, which is to pay someone back.
Yeah.
Because Rodney's making a fuss about, like, no, anything but that.
Right, because clearly he has no idea what it is and just sounds like... I mean, if somebody came to you and was like, would you like to be arrested? Or this, like, other vocab word you've never heard, and it's like, ugh.
It's like, well, I know what that one means.
Right. So Rodney begs and pleads that he doesn't have $30, and then Tom is like, well, you know what, why don't we just forget about it this time, and you don't have to pay me back at all. And Rodney is like, oh, thank you. He claims that he will never forget this moment, right?
Never.
No, never will he forget it. Well, I mean, maybe he never will, but also, like, he certainly doesn't internalize what it meant to have experienced this, as we're about to find out.
No, he learned that he can steal from Tom, like, blank check,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. That seems to be more like what he took from the experience.
But now we're at Wits End, and it's a quiet day, which I feel like does not happen in Wits End anymore.
Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. But remember, these are the early days of Wits End.
We just have to imagine that this is a flashback
mm-hmm.
to earlier times.
When Rodney really was 12 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
Connie and Wit are, like, in the back playing checkers. And here is where you get the hint that, like, this is Connie pre-conversion. Because she is quoted as having said that checkers is very hick. Like... a sort of, you know, country bumpkin type of game to play.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom tells her, like, oh, I think this, like, you know, suave and worldly wise, you know, young metropolitan woman would be playing checkers. And that is definitely not a way that he would be teasing her post her conversion and move to Odyssey.
Mm-hmm. Like, once she's established, I think that they would have moved past the, oh, mm-hmm. the California girl.
Right, because there's a huge chunk, I mean, it's not huge, but there is a significant part of Connie's story in which she moves to Odyssey, but she has the consistent goal of trying to move back to California. So she is refusing to plant roots in Odyssey, although her roots are growing there despite her best efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So this is definitely a scene of that happening, where it's like, you know, she's ostensibly got disdained for this Odyssey thing, you know, playing checkers, but she is also clearly, like, extremely invested and having a lot of fun.
And she also, like, reads into something Wit had said that mm-hmm. we didn't get to hear, and she's like, well, Wit thinks I'm a snob and a coward, so... I'm mm-hmm. gonna beat him at this stupid game.
Mm-hmm. And we're like, I didn't say that. And she's like, yeah, but that's what you meant. And so while they're playing checkers, Wit is like, I heard on my radio about Rodney. Because Wit has, like, a police radio, which is, like, a normal thing that Wit can do.
Yeah.
I think it is still a thing that you can do.
Listen, like, to a police band?
A police band. Yeah, I think so. I don't think you need a permit to listen to the... radio frequencies.
If superhero films have taught me anything, anyone right. can listen in on them.
Totally. And if we're wrong, then it was different in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tom kind of, like, roughly fills them in, and then, like, who should come in the door but Rodney himself? Tom, like, goes out and looks and is like, oh, it's Rodney, and he's going over there to talk to Pete. And then we kind of, like, whoop over from our Tom perspective to whatever it is going on with Rodney.
Apparently, Peter owes Rodney $2.
The fortune.
For children.
A child fortune.
For children in the 80s, specifically.
Right.
It's like, that could get you, like, I don't know, 3 sodas or mm-hmm. 4 comic books.
So many video games in the arcade.
Oh, yeah. It's like an hour of fun right there.
Totally. So Rodney is shaking up this poor Pete child, who is definitely Connie's voice actor.
I was trying to place that, and I was like...
That, she does a really good, like, young boy impression, which I think is, like, pretty normal in, like, anime for women to play boys mm-hmm. as just the voice acting. So Pete is like, I don't have my allowance yet, like, just give me a couple days and I'll get my allowance. And Rodney is quite threatening. And Pete leaves Wits End, and then we've got a scene of Jimmy, whom we know and love, talking to Pete on the street, I guess, mm-hmm. on the sidewalk somewhere, and Jimmy doesn't have any money to loan him, otherwise he would help, so Pete is like, oh man, like, what am I gonna do?
Yeah, because we learn that Peter, like, spent all his lunch money on comic books, mm-hmm. and so that's why he had to borrow money, and he can't talk to his mom about it, because she'd chew him out for borrowing money.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I just gotta wait until my dad can give me my allowance.
Mm-hmm. So, alas. There's kind of interesting stuff to talk about, like, culture around borrowing in this scene, I feel. Maybe we put a pin in it for discussing afterwards.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just intriguing, like, American small-town culture.
Yeah.
And so, like, who should appear in the alleyway but Rodney?
Had a note of Rodney is in the bushes, and I don't know where I got that from.
I mean, essentially, he's like, hey, you kid. I was confused just because I'm like, how much time has passed? In my mind, Pete leaves and then goes meets Jimmy on the street. Apparently, Pete has, like, gone and done stuff in the interim.
I guess?
What it reads like to me is that Pete and Rodney are both in Wits End. Pete leaves. Rodney also leaves, like, runs ahead of him and jumps into the alley. And then when Pete gets there, Rodney is like, hey, kid.
Rodney takes a shortcut.
Exactly.
And then lies in ambush.
That's very much what it felt like. Well, apparently time has passed, and so Rodney feels like it's time to shake up this poor child again.
I thought it was a different day until later it's confirmed, no, this is the same day.
It's all happening on the same... Like, Rodney, chill. But Pete, like, did get a dollar from his dad, like, $1 advance on his allowance, so maybe, that's something.
Yeah. Maybe he went home and, like, halfway cleaned his room or something?
Right, that was the issue, is he didn't have any time to, like, do the rest of his chores to earn that money. So he, like, only had $1 to give to Rodney. So, here commences, like, it's a sad scene, but also it is somehow extremely funny to me.
The way that slapstick. It starts.
Right, it does, and I don't think that it should have been written that way. Because as Rodney is in the alley, he's like, hey, come in here. And then Jimmy is like, I'll go with you. And Pete is like, no, it's fine, with Rodney being the reasonable person that he is. And he's like, totally serious.
He's a friendly kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be fine.
Like, Pete, you already had a negative encounter with Rodney in Wits End. Like, no danger sense does this child have.
None whatsoever.
Right, which is not to blame him for what happens, but it is, like, a little bit goofy of, like, oh, nothing bad's about to happen to me.
I think this is another one of the pitfalls of the fact that they retrofitted another episode.
Mm-hmm.
In that, like, maybe the kid who was previously filling this role of Rodney
mm-hmm.
was normally a reasonable kid.
Perhaps so.
But we have...
Yeah, like, you're right. That would have made a lot more sense.
We have lots of evidence now
right.
to point to the fact that Rodney is anything but reasonable.
Like, don't go into the alley alone with a Rodney. So he does, though. And then Rodney shakes him up for the last remaining dollar. And, you know, threatens to do more than push him, and then, indeed, pushes him real good.
Into the garbage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds bad. It sounds like it was, like, a rough fall. And the can topples over.
Mm-hmm. And then we have a scene, like, we cut from that to Tom, like, whistling and walking down the street and saying hi to people.
Mm-hmm.
Which also felt very silly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are the kinds of moments that, like, pros and cons. Like, on the one hand, I do enjoy these older Odyssey episodes that breathe a lot and mm-hmm. just, like, are taken up with these sort of silly, sweet, frivolous things.
Sort of mundane moments.
Exactly, yeah. And then on the other hand, I'm thinking, like, if this had been in albums, say, like, 20, they would have had, like, this whole parable play out. Probably, like, with a whole, like, second B-plot play out at the same time that's teaching, like, a nuanced version of this, or, like, the other side of the coin lesson,
mm-hmm.
and, like, you know what I mean?
Like, a version with the adults to parallel the version with the kids, or, mm-hmm. like, two different kids' stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, they would have been, like, it would have been this episode, like, with its hands tied behind its back and blindfolded. They could have told this story, you know?
It's yeah.
just, they get so, like, snappy and efficient and clever. But there is also something pleasant about Tom being like, hello, so-and-so. Oh, hello, so-and-so.
Yeah.
Hello, Jimmy and Pete.
And then, like, stops, goes back. Jimmy and Pete, what's wrong?
Jimmy and Pete, you don't look so great. This scene is also, like, maybe we put a little pin in it because there is more interesting, like, child culture happening in which Jimmy and Pete both insist, like, everything is fine. I mean, it's not stated outright, but I think that there is, like, a massive stigma around being a tattletale.
Yeah.
And so Pete doesn't want to tell Tom anything. He's like, no, I'm fine. He seems a little bit weepy. And Tom is like, it looks like a garbage truck ran into you.
It's like I tripped into a trash can.
He's like, did you, like, trip, or did somebody, like, make you tramp into a trash can, Pete? And Pete cannot say, but Jimmy steps up and is like, I will say that it was Rodney who done it.
And Tom is like, oh, was it now?
Yeah, and they explain it was, like, you know, for the dollar. And Tom is like, wow, for $1 Rodney did this to you, did he?
Tom's gonna call his father.
Tom's got a Tom scheme. We've had Tom scheme episodes before. And this is our mid-episode break. Now, if this were later Odyssey also, they would have put that break right when Rodney pushed Pete into the trash can, and we would have been left wondering if Pete survived.
And then mortal peril.
Exactly.
I was like, this is a parental peril.
Parental peril for Rodney. Yeah, they, like, really toned down the stakes on the mid-episode break for this one, which is fine. I don't mind the lack of mortal peril.
It's a far cry from a serial killer on the side of the road.
Right? Who turns out to just be a person. Classic. So, from mid-episode, we come back to a ding-dong at the door of somebody's house.
And Bart opens the door to see Officer Orion. What a pleasant surprise!
Oh, pleasantly surprised by the police.
Is it ever a pleasant surprise if a police officer rings your doorbell? Please tell me, is this, like, a normal thing in a small town setting where maybe you just know everyone?
Right, yeah. One can imagine. This is our first Bart.
Yeah.
We were informed by our listener that, like, the reason why Bart is characterized the way he is once again because the writers didn't sit down and be like, now let's write this, like, zany comedy character, Bart Rathbone, that he, like, later turns into. It is just a redo of the original dad character of this episode, and Walker Edmiston was there and was like, I'll play the dad.
Yeah, I feel like Bart in this episode is, like, the responsible parent, whereas Bart in the rest of Odyssey would be like, you want to steal some apples, Rodney? I'll get the basket.
Totally. Well, he would have been like, Rodney, you gotta be smarter about it.
Don't get caught.
And don't call me Pop. yeah, here's the origin of Bart Rathbone, whom Officer Orion calls Bill in this scene, because the original character was called Bill.
I was listening for it and I still missed it.
It was super quick. Super quick. So Rodney comes to the door and the officer is like, come with me, young lad, young Rodney.
Well, he even asks him, are you Rodney Rathbone of such and such address? And I'm like, sir, you saw this kid not like 24 hours ago.
It's really confusing as to why he's like pretending not to know him. If it was Officer Harley, he would be playing up like the pageantry of the procedure.
Yes.
That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But played straight, it just reads as like, why does Officer Orion not know this person?
Mm-hmm.
Never explained. Here was very concerning to me until I knew what was going on, and then even afterwards was Bart being like, well, go with him, I mean, he's the law. And Rodney being like, am I under arrest? And they're like, I don't know, he's the law.
I'm like, Bart, are you not going to, like, fight for your kid here?
Are you not gonna teach him what his rights are?
Yeah, like,
you don't have to get into a police officer's car if they say get into my car.
Like, if anything, this is a lesson that you don't want to teach kids.
Totally.
That if a police officer demands you to get in the car, you have to get in the car.
Yeah, that's a scary lesson to teach kids. Or adults.
Really, anyone.
Uh-huh. Yep. you know, long arm of the law and all that. Mm. So Rodney gets into the car, and then while Rodney is not present, we get a glimpse of what is really happening, which is that they're all in cahoots, these adults. They're conspiring to teach Rodney a lesson.
Just don't scare him too much, okay?
That worried me in a whole completely different way. I was like, is this police officer about to, like, take Rodney for a scary ride or something? But he takes Rodney into the car and Rodney's like, where are we going? And the officer tells him that it's restitution time, which, once again, is a word that Rodney is very afraid of.
See, now, also, cul-de-sac or pin, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think the only thing I will say now and then put a pin in it mm-hmm. is this could have been done without the intervention of a police officer if mm-hmm. restitution was the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. this could have just been, like, the parental punishment
mm-hmm.
of, like, you did a wrong thing and now we're going back to Tom's farm.
Mm-hmm. Right, Bart taking his son somewhere and being like, oh, you'll find out, is, like, very different. Then a police officer be like, you'll find out where we're going.
Mm-hmm. We hear sirens again mm-hmm. as they pull up to the farm.
Yeah, what's the excuse this time? They don't even mention it.
No, they don't.
I didn't notice it until you mentioned it just now.
I assume it was to scare Rodney.
Yay. Okay, well, they're back at the farm, and Tom and Officer O'Ryan have, like, a very, like, well now sort of attitude. And Rodney doesn't quite grasp what's going on, as, like, Tom explains, like, it's time to settle accounts. And he calculates that Rodney owes him $27.42 for all of the damage and the apples and the labor that it would cost to fix everything.
Of course, Rodney doesn't have that kind of money.
Mm-hmm. So they're like, what shall we do? Should we push him into the trash?
Threaten him?
And Tom is like, no, that would not be nice. This is a sketchy scene, like...
Uh-huh.
I mean, I know exactly what they're doing. It's just weird that a police officer is like, shall we push him into the trash?
Also that he started out by being like, should we threaten him?
Mm-hmm.
Which I understand that they are replaying the things that he did to Peter
mm-hmm.
in
right.
order, but... Yikes, man.
Yeah, they're pantomiming something. It's like, pretty clear that they're not intending to do it, but also, like, Rodney is a child.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway... and so Tom is like, no, those things are not nice. How about we just do, like, a labor trade? Like, Rodney just fixes everything himself. And Rodney is like, I thought I didn't have to?
Mm-hmm. And Tom's like, well, you know what? I decided not to let you off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being about as fair as you were with Peter Holt.
Mm-hmm. It has taken this long for Rodney to realize that there's a connection between this and his thing with Pete. And now that it is explained to him directly, he is not, like, more penitent.
Nope.
He's just like, I'm gonna call my dad. And they're like, your dad won't help you.
Your dad's in on it.
Yeah, your dad will back us up.
Ooh.
That's more or less it for Rodney.
Yep.
So we've got, like, one final scene, which is basically completely unnecessary, except that, once again, it's kind of nice to have the space to just, like, have characters talk about what we just heard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're essentially gonna do their own, like, recap and discussion episode.
A very brief, like, 2-minute recap and discussion episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So... the lights are on. I guess it's late. The checkers games are flowing.
Which I guess this means it's the same day still? All of this happened in the same day?
Yes. All of this happened in the same day.
Hmm.
And Tom is like, is it the same game? Which would be wild. But no, they're like, it's best 3 of 4.
No, it's best 6 out of 7
uh-huh,
by now.
Right. And also they, like, frequently mention that the floors are wet because they have mopped the floors, like... For the love of everything that is holy, Tom, the floors are wet.
Chekhov's wet floors.
Chekhov's wet floors that are about to go off. So they settle back down to discussing everything that happened with Rodney, and Whit is like, I saw Bart at the store getting the hand cream for Rodney's blister. And he's like, hey, Tom, did it all remind you of that story in Matthew 18?
And this is the other clue that we have that this is pre-conversion Connie. Mm-hmm. She's like, there's a Bible verse behind all this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Which is like, I mean, if you were trying to act like this is all in continuity, you could argue that Connie just isn't that familiar with her Bible yet, but it just, it rings very hollow.
Yeah.
So Tom explains the parallel, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He actually doesn't explain it, like, quite in as much detail as I thought he would. I thought he would have been like, here's the parable, and here's how it lines up with what happens.
It was more of a like, well, Rodney wronged me by stealing my apples and breaking my fence. I forgave him. But then Rodney went out and pushed Peter around and didn't forgive him. And so he didn't learn his lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Any similarity between that and Matthew 18 is purely intentional.
Yay. Classic Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
So Whit is like, okay, if we're going to be here playing checkers, I'm going to get coffee. And then when he comes back, he, like, very much slips on the wet floor.
Even though being the one who warned about it.
Mm-hmm. And the checkers go everywhere, and there's just, like, line after line of, like, comedy wrap-up moments of, like, where are the checkers? You're sitting on them! I thought that's where it was going to end, and then Tom is like, let me help you up! And Tom
falls.
Like, yes, just many, many pratfalls, and then Connie is like, both of you stay there, I'm going to get the coffee.
I was mostly concerned about, like, two old men falling, because I'm like, you could break a bone, and that is much worse for you than it would be for Connie.
Right? If Whit were here, he'd be like, old, you say?
Yeah.
Yes, Whit, two old men, you heard us. Too old to be doing pratfalls on a wet floor.
Mm-hmm.
Why would the writers do this to you?
For the lols.
Exactly. This is, like, at a point in time where they didn't quite know how to end an episode without it being, like, a sitcom and everybody laughs.
Yeah, I put everybody laughs in my note and then mm-hmm. lots of question marks.
Everybody laughs? Did everybody need to laugh?
And also Connie wasn't laughing.
That's true. Which is, yeah, Connie was rolling her eyes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have our discussion questions?
I've got them brought up.
Ha. Uh-huh.
I've got question one. What does it mean to forgive someone?
Okay.
This is what we might call an explain God question.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What does it mean to forgive someone? I feel like they kind of explained it in the episode. I think it's like to not hold the wrongdoings that have been perpetrated against you against another person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And in this episode, they use like a like debt metaphor,
mm-hmm.
which the Bible's got like a bunch of different metaphors for sin and forgiveness and stuff. This one makes a lot of sense to us in our culture. I've also heard the metaphor of like ammunition. Like, everything somebody does to you, you can use as ammunition back at them. But when you forgive them, it's like choosing to discard those pieces of ammunition and not ever fire them.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't mean that, like, it never happened and that you don't learn from it or make changes because of it, but yeah. Something to do with, like, how you use it in your relationship moving forward. Whether you hold it over them, like a debt or not, etc.
Yeah.
But how many times does Jesus say to forgive your neighbor?
This is a reading comprehension question.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a quick remember your Bible trivia question.
Was it 77 times, but it really just means infinite?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, it's like 77 or 70 times 7 or something, depends on, like, the translation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he means, like, so many.
Just so many. The number perfection and all that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so in these discussion questions, oftentimes we have, like, an explain God question, which is, like, that kind of question that's, like, way deeper than you think will be. It has something to do with, like, explain the nature of something, mm-hmm. such as forgiveness. And then sometimes you have a reading comprehension question, which is basically, like, did you listen to the episode? And sometimes you have a question that's, like, tell us something very deep and personal.
Is that the last one?
Yeah, describe a time that you have shown or failed to show someone mercy.
Oh, shoot.
Mercy.
It was like an either or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't have to do both.
A good or a bad.
Uh-huh. I feel like with these kinds of questions, either a story immediately pops to mind or nothing does for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. I am not thinking of anything right now.
But first I have to think of, like, a time where somebody wronged me significantly.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm trying to think, is there, like, a time at work when it would have come up? Because that's an instance where I feel like if someone drops the ball at work and it's like, I was depending on you to do this thing, and now, like, there are consequences for not getting X, Y, or Z done. Because that can be, like, a very frustrating or tense situation,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, I needed you to do the thing, and you didn't do it!
Mm-hmm. That is a much more approachable example for me, because now I'm thinking of, like, a lot of my role involves providing information to internal clients of the company, and sometimes the information is like, you need to be responsible for that information. So there's like a give and take with that, because like, to some extent, if somebody is brand new and you send them an email with the information and then they send you an email right back asking you a question, that's like, it was in the email that I just sent you.
Mm-hmm.
There are, like, boundaries where it's like, I can't spend all of my time hand-holding every person that asks a question. So very frequently the answer is, like, here's where the information is.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, even though it might be just as fast for me to answer the question, we just, like, tell people how to find that information, which I think is a good policy. But then I think there can be an element of mercy that is, like, very hard to quantify, but it mostly has to do with, like, how generous I'm willing to be with my own personal energy when it comes to answering an email. Like, sometimes if somebody is genuinely confused and I'm like, okay, I understand why that person's confused, and I can just give the standard reply of like, nope, you're responsible for that information, go find it out yourself. But then sometimes I'm like, let me take the extra time to write you like a somewhat long and complicated paragraph so that I can put you at ease. And it's, like, very subtle, but I think sometimes there might be an element of mercy in there, especially if that person has been a pain.
Yeah, I think that's same for me. I think because I work in managing information as well, like, on a different side, because I manage information that people need in order to work with their clients, there is also an aspect of, like, the information is out there, and you just haven't taken the time to learn how to search for it. So why are you coming and asking me about this?
Mm-hmm.
And especially if people come and ask me about a thing because it's like my name was on a page because I was the last person to touch it. It doesn't mean I'm the person who, like, knows this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's, like, an element of mercy in, like, I will help you find the person who knows this. Because by the nature of my work, I'm a little bit more interconnected than I think a lot of other people are.
Right. It's also, like, there's a little bit more of, like, basic administration skills for some people than for others.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people haven't learned, like, what to do to find that information. And if you just say, like, no, not me, then they're going to be stranded.
Yeah.
Even though it's like, I know just as much as you are, you're treating me like Google right now.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, okay, I'll be your Google. I'll go to the page and look up the information and tell it to you, even though, like, you would have done the exact same thing to find out that information. But sometimes, like, information feels very mystical and unapproachable.
Yeah. I think, like, one of the things I like to do is I will tell them the answer to the question they're asking me in the moment, and then I will give them the path to find it later if they have more questions. So it's like, if you ever are, like, stuck, here is your starting point.
When those people don't learn from that lesson.
That's when you show mercy.
That's when it becomes a need for mercy. But also a need for boundaries.
Yeah.
That's funny. I feel like what makes it, like, a mercy thing versus a boundaries thing is the fact that, like, $30 is a lot to Rodney, but, like, nothing to Tom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, in that work situation, our mental bandwidth is all, like, roughly equal.
True.
So somebody, like, pinging you for your bandwidth is like, yeah, sure. But also, like, it's better for everybody if you learn how to do it yourself. So, anyhow. Can we pick up our pins?
There are so many. Scattered on the floor, we're gonna step on them.
Ow!
I think your pin is the first one early on.
Yes.
This what is always the trouble with pins versus cul-de-sacs. Yes. It's like, what did we drop?
What did we say we were going to talk about?
Can't see it in the carpet.
What? Oh, pins. I went to pick up my notes, so I thought you were referring to that as, like, me trying to find my idea, and you're like, it's not there. You won't find it by looking on the ground.
And I thought you were going to say, what, my lime green journal?
Yeah. My very bright lime green journal, courtesy of your mom.
Yeah.
It was a very sweet gift of this journal. Let's see, what is my note? Child culture.
That's right.
No, wait.
There was an earlier one.
Borrowing culture.
Yeah.
So we've got like two like small town of Odyssey culture sort of pinpoints. So in the scene where Pete and Jimmy briefly talk about how Pete can get that dollar for Rodney, there are kind of like two interesting mentions of borrowing. So first off, Pete is like, my mom would punish me or be mad at me or whatever if she found out I borrowed in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Followed pretty quickly by Jimmy saying, I would lend you the dollar if I had one. So we've got like these two kids from two families with maybe different philosophies on borrowing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like if you grow up in America, either you probably are like Pete's family or know people like Pete's family who have like a pretty hard line drawn. It's, against borrowing.
It's the whole neither a borrower nor lender be thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which has tremendous wisdom to it. It's just not always completely feasible, especially in our society.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that wisdom would have served Pete well. You gotta be careful about who you borrow and lend with. Like, it ties you to a person in a more tighter way than just the bonds of friendship.
Like, owing someone is... Mm-hmm. Very different.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is also why we have, like, within our own friendship circle, a more generosity focus way of handling mm-hmm. money with each other. Because it's like, now none of us are owing anyone anything. It's just... Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, it makes sense to me because I experience it. I feel like it would make sense to our listeners as well. It's like, I just don't want that to be an element of the relationship. And if you are, like, spending a lot of time with people, like, cooking for each other, eating out together, etc., etc.,
mm-hmm.
like, it really simplifies the logistics of being friends.
This reminds me that I have a friend who is, like, frequently, like, I don't want money to be the reason that you don't come to hang out with, like, mm-hmm. a home group thing.
Mm-hmm.
And... I think I come from a family culture that was very neither a borrower nor lender be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always kind of like, okay, but what's the expectation here?
Mm-hmm.
Because from my upbringing, it's always like you pay back anything that is like lent to you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Be it money or like a service, like movie tickets or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think in a lot of cultures, that kind of mutuality... It, like, comes through in other acts of service. Like, I remember one of my professors studying abroad in Australia said, like, he would have that experience of, like, I don't know if he, like, lent money to, like, one of the neighbors or something, or, like, gave them, like, fruit from his tree or something, or, like, they came and asked if they could, like, pick the fruit, and so he said, sure, and then, like, later on he got, like, this, like, incredible dish made from the food, and he was like, oh, heck yeah.
Nice.
Right. I think it was, like, some kind of service that they traded each other, mm-hmm. but it wasn't, like, agreed upon. It was, like, I think this family was Middle Eastern,
mm-hmm.
and so he was like, oh, okay. Like, him being, like, a white Australian was, you know, probably not used to that, and so I don't know why, for some reason, that story stuck with me. But I think it was, like, this picture of, like, there are other cultural ways of doing things that, like, we've talked about high context and low context cultures before, and that's, like, a very high context culture sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
where it's, like, you know, your question of what's the expectation behind this act.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes the answer is, like, there is a high context expectation, and then other times the answer is, like, you've been generous to me and I'm going to be generous to you, and this is the social contract mm-hmm. that we're in. And it doesn't have to, quote-unquote, balance out perfectly in the end.
Because I know, like, it can feel bad to not be able to be generous with people the way that they are with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it feels sometimes like there's an imbalance in the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right, because I mean, money is power.
Yeah.
So in some ways it is like a real power imbalance.
Mm-hmm. And I think that also ties into like the lending culture thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, to borrow from someone is to give them power over you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, and it's just, you know, like, you don't want to give Rodney power over you.
Mm-hmm. It also just occurred to me that I think that the person I'm talking about might listen to our podcast, so hi! Hello! I appreciate it when you offer to take us out for movies.
Mm-hmm. That's really nice. I mean, I think that that's great that it's, like, an upfront thing when mm-hmm. it's stated that way. Because, I mean, especially, like, in today's society, especially, like, age differences and, like, especially living in the place that we do, there are just going to be people of, like, the entire spectrum mm-hmm. of, like, financial status, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I feel like I appreciate that our, like, small group of friends is pretty open, but also I think that we have kind of developed that by, like, many years of earning each other's trust.
Mm-hmm.
So, not saying that this is, like, the friendship that you all have to aspire to or anything, but...
It's a little peek into how our little group works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not like you have to be super public with your own financial information, but it is nice when you can communicate something like, I would like to spend time with you and not have finances be the limiting factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can be like, so what can we do that we can all, like, afford? Or you can be like, let me treat you to this thing because I want to go and I want you to come. Mm-hmm. You know? We've done that for each other as well. Like,
yeah.
This is sort of, like, a little bit backwards by the culture standards, but I think it also just, like, makes a lot of sense by the standards of our friendship that, like, for 1 year I wanted to go to Disneyland for my birthday, and that's, like, extremely expensive.
Yeah.
And so, like, I paid for the tickets and hotels because it's what I wanted, and I'm not gonna be like, I want this, now everybody buy it for me.
Yeah.
So... You know, and then later on, like, you did the same exact thing. So it's mm-hmm. like, it really does eventually kind of balance out, even though that's not exactly the goal. It's not like you could compare receipts from both of those trips and they would, like, perfectly exactly equal. Line up, because that's just not how life works.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so much easier to live without doing the balance.
It is.
The penny pinching.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Yeah, anyway, there's a glimpse into our friendships. That was a long pin discussion for just one tiny conversation.
For just a couple of offhand comments about, like, oh, I can't tell my mom I was borrowing, and then
mm-hmm.
I would lend if I could.
Uh-huh, right. And both of them treat that as, like, completely normal. Because it is. It's, like, a very American thing. Like, either way.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a lot of sense to me. Here's the other, like, very American, very, like, kid culture kind of thing. The, like, tattletale
mm-hmm.
conversation where when Tom asks them what happened, like, both Jimmy and Pete pretty much clam up and they don't want his attention at all. And it has nothing to do with who Tom is, except that Tom's an adult.
Yeah.
I feel like if this had been another kid who came by, they would have told them immediately. Like, imagine if Robin was like, Pete, what happened to you? He would have been like, Rodney beat me up, you know?
I feel like part of it is that, like, other kids don't have the same kind of power mm-hmm. that adults have. And it's like, yeah, this adult might have power to do something in the short term, but I'm the one who still has to, like, go to school and live my life alongside Rodney. Mm-hmm. Like, that adult is not going to always be there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when I go to them, now I'm going to have the stigma of having snitched.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, snitches get stitches. And I think the reason why Jimmy doesn't speak up immediately is probably because he is also protecting Pete from this code.
Mm-hmm.
Until he, like, he kind of almost has, like, this hero moment of being like, I'll tell.
Like, I'll be the one to take mm-hmm. the fall.
Right, so it's like, okay, Pete doesn't have to be the one who snitched. I'll be the snitch.
And also, it's sort of a, like, well, Rodney is targeting you, not me.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so, like, me telling is not the same as you getting an adult involved.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy is, like, loopholing the social structure.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel, though, like, it doesn't matter who told, Rodney is still going to come for Pete.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think that's maybe also Jimmy making the executive decision, like, no, this was bad. Like, even kids eventually will be like, it's adult time.
It's like, this has gone beyond the bounds of, like, we can deal with this within our little social hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where those bounds lie is very dependent on the child culture of whatever the location is. Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting the things that the writers, like, may or may not realize that they're teaching or enforcing. Like, I wonder if they intentionally were trying to show, like, you should tell adults. Or if they were trying to show, like, you know, it's, you know, don't snitch. I mean, they wouldn't intentionally show that, but, like, they did kind of reinforce it as being, like, a normal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they were trying to show that you should tell the Toms of your life. When the Rodneys of your life beat you up. Who's the Tom of your life?
Teachers, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, the scary thing is when you get to be an adult, there are no more Toms in your life. You become the Tom.
That's the scary part.
Mm-hmm. And there are still Rodneys out there.
Mm-hmm. The Toms are HR, and they're not always reliable.
Depending on the company you work for. Indeed. Indeed. What pins did you drop?
See, now I'm trying to remember.
Now
I know
you need to look at your notes.
I don't think I wrote them in my notes.
You won't find them on the carpet.
They'll be there until I step on them and they get stuck in my foot.
Mm-hmm.
I know one of them had to do with, it was an officer.
Orion.
I almost called him Harley.
You see, the writers wrote him out, but they didn't do a good enough job. We still know who it is.
It was an Officer Orion moment, and now I feel like I'm forgetting another one, but it's fine.
It might come up.
It might come up. And I don't know if this was a pin that I, like, verbally dropped,
mm-hmm.
or if I just pinned it in my mind,
mm-hmm.
but it was that moment at the door
mm-hmm.
when he's talking to Bart
mm-hmm.
about Rodney, and it's like, this is something that could have been dealt with without the intervention of the police.
Right. Yeah, so what exactly happened? Did Tom call Bart and they together were like, let's get Officer Orion involved?
Like, was this a three-part scheme?
Mm-hmm. It seems like it, because Tom was definitely expecting him, and so was Bart.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like Tom and Bart cooked this up, and then one of them got in touch with the police.
And then told him to, like, drop by and pretend to arrest Rodney.
Right. So they essentially decided, like, let's use the police as clout to scare Rodney straight.
And man, I do not think that that is something you want to be, like, normalizing in the minds of children.
Yeah. There were just a lot about the police interaction in the latter half of the episode, specifically, that was like, don't tell kids to do whatever a police officer says.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teach them their actual rights.
Like, I get that the lesson that they were teaching Rodney in this episode was don't steal and, mm-hmm. like, pay restitution for your mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Or at least, like, show mercy as you've been shown mercy.
Mm-hmm. Or else, like, you'll be treated the way that you treat others.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the whole thing of, like, I feel like they could have just left the police out of it. Tom was calling Bart, and then I felt like Bart could have been the one to be, like, at least this version of Bart. Maybe mm-hmm. not, like, future versions of Bart, but...
Yes, good caveat.
The Bart in this episode that we get, I feel like a good parent would have taken the, like, meeting out of punishment into their own hands.
Mm-hmm. Right. They wouldn't have been like, oh yeah, let's concoct a scheme to have the officer come get him. They would have been like, Rodney, come get in the car. We're going somewhere. Mm-hmm. Try not to worry about where we're going.
And then it would have been like, I heard what you did,
mm-hmm.
and you are going to make up for this mistake, and I am going to show you, like, by, I don't know, either by example or by, like, just being a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And talking to your kid about why what they did was wrong. It's just like the whole, he's the law and I'm not going to do anything to back up my child who's getting taken away.
You just gotta go with it. He's the long arm of the law. Come to take you away, my son. Will I ever see you again? I don't know.
It's been nice knowing you. My hands are tied.
Ever since you said, like, the Bart that we get in this episode, I've been thinking, like, not the Bart we deserve, but the Bart that we need right now. Is it time for final thoughts? On that note?
On that note, sure. I feel like I could talk a long time about my thoughts about the representation of the police officer in this episode, but I do not think this is necessarily the space for it, so.
I will say, I mean, if their intention was to make the policeman not a comedy character, or at least, like, to make him not a ridiculous character, I don't think they succeeded, because he is still, like, very ridiculous. He's not a, like, normal person.
They did not rewrite that dialogue enough.
Right, and it's, like, it's the goofy accent that gets me, because it's not, like, a particularly bad Irish accent, but it is, like, a non-Irish person doing an accent type of accent.
It's clearly someone putting on an accent.
Exactly. Which, like, kids won't know. But, like, and there's nothing wrong with, like, representing people with accents to children. I just think that, like, it's gonna be, like, entertainingly goofy to children unless it's done more sincerely.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Like the Italian bike sellers.
Yes, the egregious Italian bike salesman.
It seems like a lot of these Lost episodes involved people putting on accents mm-hmm. that were not their own accents. Mm-hmm. But we also get an episode of Wit's grandmother? Mother? Stepmother?
Mm-hmm. Right, with a good Scottish accent. Mm-hmm. And her Scottish accent doesn't strike me as fake.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if that actor really was Scottish.
Mm-hmm. Or at least had training.
Mm-hmm. Or, like, knew somebody in her own family who was Scottish. Like, it sounded convincing to my adult ear.
Mm-hmm. And it was played very straight.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that episode sticks with me quite a bit, come to think of it, from when I was a kid, because that probably was my first real exposure to that accent.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting to think about.
Should we also mention that Peter has a hick accent?
Does he? I kind of didn't really think about it. Oh, you know what? He kind of does. I feel like that was a little bit of, this is because it's Connie's actor. It's, like, her attempt at doing, like, a child character. So it's, like, very, like, gee willikers, sort of.
Yeah.
Like, classic small child. Cartoonish small child.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I just picked it up because, like, I can recognize that accent pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. You with your Midwestern connections?
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Not that Midwesterners are hicks.
I just used the word because Connie used the word exactly. In the episode.
So it's in our minds as well. My final thought is that as I was listening to it, I really did think that this was a good portrayal of the parable. Mm-hmm. If they had let it be a little bit more straightforward, or, like, maybe if they just, like, cut out the fat of the replacement officer character who wasn't very effective.
Like, it could have been anyone who found Rodney stealing mm-hmm. the apples.
Right. It could just have been, like, a normal policeman.
A normal policeman, or even just, like, I don't know, a farmhand.
Sure. They should have just done his dialogue a little bit less doofy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's very effective at portraying the emotion of the parable, where, like, as Tom is our God stand-in, like, he comes across as being very reasonable and very easy to understand, as opposed to, like, sometimes when you read those parables, you're like, this guy is so angry for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they just did a good job of fleshing out the parable.
Interesting that they don't specifically name or tell the parable at the end.
Right, that I was, like, fully expecting them to, like, read it almost line for line or something.
Maybe they're just expecting the audience to either A, be fully familiar with it, mm-hmm. because it probably is one of the stories that kids will hear in Sunday school,
mm-hmm.
or B, expect the parents to be like, yes, Timmy, this is Matthew 18.
Let's read it together. Some of the rougher ones. It is a rough parable.
Mm-hmm.
Something that this parable retelling also does very well is, like, teaching kids the notion of restitution, because I think in the original parable, the king is like, into prison, and you're not getting out until you pay back the last penny. And that leaves people with the question, like, how are they going to pay back the last penny if they're in prison?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, like, they would work. Pretty sure.
Yeah, prison work.
And so that was like, you know, but it's a little bit obfuscated. But I really like that they're teaching, like, you don't just, like, the point isn't just to punish the person. The point is, like, something is broken, and I was going to take on the cost myself, but if you don't want to live in that world with me, then you can work it off, and you will.
Yeah, because it's not saying that, like, therefore Peter doesn't have to pay back Rodney either. It's... Mm-hmm. Peter, you can take all the time you need, like, you don't have to do it in this arbitrary deadline that Rodney has imposed upon you.
And I think if this had been about punishment, then it would make sense to push Rodney into the trash, because it's like, the punishment should mirror the crime. But no. Yeah, there's actually, like, a good amount of, like, nuance in the story that is sort of obfuscated by the officer being like, I put the siren on because Rodney asked.
By Officer Will Ryan O'Harley.
That's the episode title. Officer Will Ryan O'Harley. The hybrid character. Good stuff.
I think my final thought is that, like, this would have been a good early Odyssey episode. And the fact that it comes when it does, sandwiched between, like, tighter storytelling. It's like when you look at a shelf full of, like, beautiful, pristine, I don't know, jars that have been thrown by master artisans. Mm-hmm. And then you see, like, in the middle of them, the potter's first vase that they ever made.
Mm-hmm.
It's just by comparison.
You're like, oh, that one was probably their first one.
Yeah.
Yes. Our master potters, the Odyssey crew, truly masters of their craft. And they're throwing out one jar per week, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And this is where Jars of Clay got its name, the band, the Christian band.
Yes. From Odyssey.
From us talking about Odyssey right now.
They're time travelers.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. Sometimes we come up with a great Odyssey theory, and today is... Not that day. Well, if you have any great Odyssey theories that can replace our Jars of Clay theory, we would love to hear it. You can email those thoughts to podventuresinodyssey@gmail.com, or you can make a post on our Reddit, r/podventuresinodyssey. Next week, we are going to re-listen to the episode Pranks for the Memories, which is a great dad pun.
And a terrible episode.
It might be fun to listen to, but it's also, like, really problematic, if I recall.
I remember this one.
Yeah. This is another one where it's like, why you gotta do that to a child?
Yeah.
I believe that that is what is about to happen. Something bad to a child.
Is it Kurt?
Yeah, something bad's about to happen to Kurt.
Like, I think this is a Kurt Stevens episode.
Mm-hmm. So, we will enjoy it nonetheless, and we will most certainly discuss it. And you will most certainly listen to it, won't you, audience? If you join us again for another Podventures in Odyssey.
Catch you later, Catspaws.
Now, if this were later Odyssey also, they would have put that break when Tom pushed Pete into the trash can, and we would have cut.
You mean when Rodney put...
It's a very different episode.
Yes. I was like, wait, I don't remember Tom doing that.
Immediately after this, Tom pushes Pete, he's like, back in you go. No, if this had been a later episode, or do you want me to retake it?
Whenever, however you want to do it, I'll cut it together.